The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to the Pride of Detroit Midweek Podcast. It's First Bite. Welcome back. We have another special episode, another special guest. But before we get into all that, my name is Jeremy Reisman. I'm the managing editor of Pride of Detroit and the co-host of First Bite. With me, as always, is Ryan Matthews at Ryan_POD on Twitter. Ryan, how are we doing today?
I have to say that this is a special appearance courtesy of the Holly Area Schools District for canceling school today due to a snow day. So you're welcome.
Yes, we appreciate that gesture from them. A well-earned break for Ryan and the teachers over there. Today, we are going to talk more Matthew Stafford trade, and we've talked about it a whole bunch. You've heard our voice a ton of times, but let's get an outsider perspective. In fact, let's get an insider's perspective from Los Angeles's view. So we have a very special guest on the Rams beat. Jordan Rodrigue from The Athletic is with us, at Jordan Rodrigue. That's J-O-U-R-D-A-N Rodrigue on Twitter. Jordan, thank you for joining us today.
Guys, thank you so much for having me. I don't want to rub in what the temperature is here, but...
not a snow day.
Fair, what is snow?
That's all right. We had a guest, Amy, just on our podcast just the other day, and she's down there in very nice weather as well, and she was rubbing it in as well. So you know what? Par for the course at this point.
We have to do it.
It's fine. I spent 9 years in LA myself, and so I know what you're dealing with, and I think about it a lot, especially days like this.
Yeah, she's probably having so much trouble dealing with it.
Yeah, it's you know, someone has to take this burden on, you guys. I'll be the one.
Speaking of burdens, let's talk about Jared Goff's contract, huh?
I love that segue. Oh my gosh.
But actually, before we get into that, let's just talk about overall thoughts on the trade, because it went down kind of in a hurry on a Saturday night. What were your first reactions, Jordan, when you heard it went down?
Yeah, Chris Burke and I at The Athletic Detroit, we had a blast kind of talking about what we were doing when this happened. Mm-hmm. To back it up a little bit, on Friday night, I had gotten tipped off by a source that there were multiple exploratory talks between the Rams and other teams, not just about their quarterback, but about Jared Goff. Because it had gotten to that point where it was rock solid, you know, multiple teams were having conversations with the Rams about this, I was like, oh my gosh, this thing could happen like really quickly. And then we knew that Matthew Stafford was extremely motivated to move. And so I was like, okay, thinking maybe Sunday night news dump, you know, hit the cycle on Monday morning, right, and everything. So I'm brushing my teeth on Saturday night, and all of a sudden my watch goes off, right? Mm-hmm. And I look at it and I'm like, is that second first round pick a typo? and so I double check with the source, and yeah, there it was. And so what a crazy night, crazy sequence of events, and came together super fast because a couple of people in particular were so motivated to get that done as soon as possible. Those being Matthew Stafford and Sean McVay, ironically, in the same area, in the same, staying at the same hotel in So
what,
you know,
what just, a coincidence.
Stuff just works out sometimes if you're in the 1% of the NFL, I guess. So it just it is what it is.
Yeah, so I mean, you kind of alluded to it right there, Jordan, but the thought and the belief, it seems to be amongst everybody, is that the Rams overpaid to get a quarterback who is closer to the twilight of his career than being in the prime of it, especially when those draft picks are going to be, you know, coughed up and given to the Lions. What is just kind of your general, you know, consensus, your understanding of the reaction from fans and things like that?
Yeah, it's an interesting mix. So my personal perspective is that this is probably what you needed to do, considering the contract. You know, they that extra first round pick, not only is it a sweetener for that contract, but it also helps that movement happen so quickly. And at the 11th hour, I know that there's been a lot of great reporting out there of who they sort of leapfrogged in line to make this happen. And having that be a part of the package, I think you can consider that third round pick a net neutral, because that, you know, the Rams were going to have an extra third round pick because Brad Holmes is now the GM in Detroit. Right. Love that guy, by the way. You guys are gonna love him. He's awesome. And so to me, it felt like, yeah, you know, the Rams had made it very clear that they were ready to either move on from Jared Goff, or he could potentially have been benched in Los Angeles for a undrafted free agent backup quarterback. And it's not because of skill, which I know we'll dive into here later in the podcast. It was just because it was just time for him to be in a different system, and for Sean McVay to have a different quarterback, particularly one who could work out of structure and freestyle at the end of plays a little bit, extend drives, things like that. And so because they were so motivated, not just to convince another team, hey, you're getting basically a fresh bankroll contract, we haven't, you know, messed with it a lot, by the time other quarterbacks in this cycle get signed, you know, you're going to, it's going to be maybe, you know, top 15 quarterback money. That's what we think his floor is. That's what the Lions think his floor is. But you have to make sure that it's, you know, extra sweet to not just give up their guy, but it has to beat some of the other offers. And some of the other offers were, as we know, you know, the eighth overall pick plus a future first rounder, right? So you have to, plus a quarterback. So you have to sort of make sure that you are not getting outbid by others, especially when your head coach is really pushing for this guy in particular and Matthew Stafford. You know, it sounds to me like the Lions did right by Matthew Stafford as well, because Matthew Stafford really wanted to come play for Sean McVay.
Yeah, that can't be an understated point, Jordan. And we've talked about that on the podcast, just because of, you know, the situations that this franchise has dealt with Barry Sanders, with Calvin Johnson. Mm-hmm. It seems like if they did Matthew Stafford wrong, that would have been a huge disservice. And it would have taken a lot of time to repair something like that publicly. But the one quick follow up that I have to that is, was Matthew Stafford like their guy? Do you know of any other like exploratory, like Carson Wentz or any other quarterbacks that the Rams really showed interest in?
Yeah, they poked around on pretty much every possibility that they liked, guys in that similar mold, guys who were really, you know, that they felt could really run Sean McVay's system extremely well. Guys who are creative, who can operate out of structure a little bit. You know, the exploratory calls, you know, include places like Green Bay, probably a quick hang up in that regard.
Right. But you got to call though, right? You got
to
call. Yeah,
you have to call. That's the thing. And it's like, you know, my understanding is it was like, let's just, you know, let's make extra sure that they're not trading him, right? So yeah, there's a call, you know, it's, they're not wanting to trade Aaron Rodgers, of course, but you know, you have to check, you have to have these exploratory phone calls with a lot of different places. And they were even willing to wait as the market cycled through a little bit to see what guys popped up, what names popped up as possibilities later, you know, closer to end of February, early March. But once they realized that they could get Matthew Stafford, like this was a doable guy, like person for them to bring in via this pick load and this trade load, like that was something that really, really piqued their interest. Like I wouldn't say that back in November, Sean McVay had his sights set on a Matthew Stafford, you know, trade request. Like, I wouldn't say that at all. But once it became clear that this guy is attainable, like, you can achieve this. And, you know, they had the conversations with, you know, Kevin Demoff and Les Snead and Tony Pastores about the financial ramifications, then he very much became a point of focus. And they had already had a previous relationship built. So it was very easy to get everyone on board. Like, within 15 minutes, this trade was done, basically. So pretty impressive stuff.
Let's talk a little bit more about the perception of Matthew Stafford, because I think Lions fans are kind of getting a riot out of the last 2 weeks, because they've been pounding the table that this guy's been a top 10 quarterback for years. He's going to, you know, explode on the market if he ever hits it. And national media has kind of ignored it a little bit. You know, there's been some people that like him a lot, and there has been some that don't. But then, you know, the narrative, once he's on the market, it seems like the narrative completely changed. Everyone's like, let's go get this guy. He's going to get us a Super Bowl. Is that the feeling there in Los Angeles right now? Or, you know, because I've seen some analytics guys, Ben Baldwin's a guy out there who thinks, you know, Stafford's good, but he's not that much of a upgrade over Jared Goff. So I'm just curious as to your overall feel for where Matthew Stafford lies, and maybe your personal thoughts as well.
Yeah, great question. And I know it's kind of crazy. I mean, it's kind of like Jared, the opinions run the range of, what's possible. I think that what really interests me about Matthew Stafford is what I had mentioned briefly earlier, is how he works out of structure. And the Los Angeles Rams, because they are resource limited and they don't have first round picks, they are not going to be able to heavily invest in their offensive line past the prime, or past the sort of playing time and playing age of guys like Andrew Whitworth, Rob Havenstein. They've got, you know, a couple of lesser known interior offensive linemen that, and they need to shore up that area, but they're not going to be able to pay to bring in premier talent there. It's going to be maybe like about at the mean, right? So your offensive line play outside of Andrew Whitworth is probably going to revert to the mean, which most offensive line play in the league does. Right. So understanding that and knowing where they're at in terms of that operationally running their offense, working out of structure becomes so important when the initial play breaks down, when your pressure breaks, or when your protection breaks down and the pressure starts getting to you. How can you negotiate through that chaos is what they say. And they're big on that. And that's just not something that Jared has really ever been comfortable with. And he's great at doing a lot of other things, and he's got the arm, and he can do a lot of things when the system is really working around him. But when things like, you know, teams are bringing only four, and you have to negotiate the ball downfield somehow because, you know, the pressure's, you know, pushing the middle of your pocket in, or you have to reset your launch points and sort of freestyle with your receivers downfield, or even what we saw when with glimpses of when John Walford was starting for the Rams, a quarterback who a stout run game is not, his success is not predicated upon having the run game just be successful, and not necessarily because he can run, more so he can continue to reset his pocket and his launch points. That's what I see when I continue to watch Matthew Stafford operate specifically in those chaos points, and especially when he's kind of getting the ball back to the intermediate and downfield areas. Sean McVay really wants to reintroduce explosive passing plays into his offense. They weren't able to do this year. The turnovers that Jared was having over the last 2 years, really big turnover issues there. And then also, you know, moving the offense towards a more high probability play system where your air yards per pass are down for, you know, to the lowest of his career. And you're going toward the more short routes, the catch and run plays, and depending on that plus your run game to provide your explosives. Well, that's, as Sean McVay says, that's not the world that he wants to live in. He wants to be able to move the ball through the air downfield. He wants to be able to mix in a lot of different things that can help develop his plays, you know, 3 seconds, 3.5 seconds, just that little bit of extra time. And again, that last second and a half usually comes out of structure. So that's something he really, really sees in Matthew Stafford. I see that as well. I don't necessarily know yet. I'm always one who's hesitant. Like, I've got to see how he works with this group in person myself. So I'm always one that sort of hesitates to like grade the trade or anything like that. But I do think that by bringing in Matthew Stafford, who I do think is an improvement in this offense, Sean McVay is kind of counting on Matthew Stafford, the addition of Matthew Stafford, to not only mask the inevitable regression that you see year over year when a team has a number one defense, which they had last year. And that will inevitably regress. It's just how it works. The league tries to pull us all down into parity, and it's, you know, depressing, but whatever. And and so he's hoping that Matthew Stafford will not only make up for any potential regression, but also give them a little extra. They need to help them win the games that they should have won this year, essentially.
Well, you know, Matthew Stafford's going to be that guy. And I think Jordan, the real reason why, you know, the Rams probably pushed in for this Godfather offer to make, you know, Stafford their quarterback is they probably realize that like their window is now, right? Is mm-hmm. is with this trade. We talked with Vinny Bonsignor about this, but you know, he made a really interesting point that, you know, the Rams didn't view all of those first round picks that they traded for the likes of Brandon Cooks and traded for Jalen Ramsey. They didn't view those as like all in trades because they have so much faith in, you know, drafting rounds 2 through 5 and hitting on those mid round picks, guys like John Johnson and things like that. So this really feels like the culmination of this really interesting hypothesis that's happening right now with the Rams and the NFL. Like, they're trading first round picks to get NFL stars. And like, this seems to be like, if we're talking, I hate superhero movies, but if we're talking like Thanos, like this is the final stone in the Infinity Gauntlet, right? Like Matthew Stafford is that, is the Rams window now, Jordan?
Well, I think it extends maybe over the next 3 years, right? Because my understanding is they're going to try to at least tack on another year to that contract to make it a little bit more front friendly and backloaded a little bit. So it's through Aaron Donald's prime years, right? It's through as Jalen Ramsey enters his prime years, right? It's through Robert Woods' prime years. It's through, I guess you could say because of his age, Cooper Kupp's prime years. And these are all their core contract guys. And what you know, Vinny is awesome, by the way. And what he said is absolutely right. And it's something that I've really enjoyed covering in great depth over here at The Athletic is this draft strategy is counting on other teams overvaluing first round picks and the Rams have them, especially outside of the top 10, top 12, have assigned a lesser value to them because their value on proven players is higher than that pick point. So, and they have it's really interesting because this is a franchise and an organization that when they see a small thread that works, they just yank on it, right? They don't pick at it. They just yank it on it. And this is one of those where the Jalen Ramsey situation, it worked. They trade, you know, 2 first-round picks and they bring in Jalen Ramsey, who arguably was the best cornerback in the league. I know the pick numbers are, people are going to argue with me over that, but I mean, he played 2 positions and you had to scheme your talent away from him on every play. And so that just does so much for a team. It's invaluable operationally. So to them, that was so much more worth and having Jalen Ramsey entering his prime years and going to be with them through, I think it's 2024, 2025, you know, you have that much, you know, a much greater asset, they believe, to your roster immediately than you do, you know, an unproven sort of 50-50 hit rate on those picks, especially outside of the top, even top 15, because the Rams believe that they are going to consistently, if they had the first round picks, they would be picking outside of the top 12, top 15. Now, the Lions obviously hope that those picks are higher, right. but you know, the Rams are betting that they're going to be good enough with this core roster that they would not have a higher first round pick that would be a higher value to them than a proven player. And they absolutely have been hitting on those rounds 2 through 6 players over the last 2-3 years. And they complemented their entire core roster with those guys in starting caliber positions, right down to undrafted free agent Darius Williams, who had a heck of a season. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's like, you have a small thread there, right? You have a small sample size of what works. And they're like, all right, we're just going for it. We're gunning it, guys.
Yeah. And well, you know, and the Lions bring Brad Holmes over So, you know, the Lions get these extra first round picks. It's going to be interesting to see whether or not the Lions sort of adapt that, you know, that ideology of, you know, capitalizing on this market inefficiency with first round picks. Now they have the Rams first round picks. Does Brad Holmes actually even pick anybody with those picks, or does he move them in a potential trade to you know, get a proven player and capitalize on that? That's a really interesting point, Jordan.
Here's my I'll give you guys, I do one hot take a year. This will be mine. One hot take.
Yes.
Here's my hot take. I think that it'll take Brad Holmes like maybe one, you know, two off seasons to build a really, really good foundation for this football team. Whether or not that includes Jared Goff, I think depends on this upcoming season. I think it'll take him two seasons to build a really, really good foundation for the Lions. And then I think he's going to start trading these freaking picks. Like, I think, and then I think he's going to start having some fun, right? Like, I think you get your core locked in, and then I think he's going to be like, I think he's going to have some fun with this.
I like it. I love moving around in the draft. I mean, the Rams like to trade down too. Like, part of the reason they didn't have all those first round picks is, I think at least on one of those occasions, they just traded out of the first round. They traded down. And so that's what I'm kind of looking forward to, because didn't see a ton of that under Bob Quinn. One quick question before we go to break, though. As you mentioned, the Lions are going to be keeping a close eye on the Rams over the next 2 years because they got those two first round picks. With, you know, you said the defense is probably likely to regress just out of, you know, statistical probability. They also lose Brandon Staley. They lose Brad Holmes. Is there any chance that you can give Lions fans a little optimism that everything falls apart sometime in the next 2 years with the Rams?
I mean, I don't think so. It's kind of like they've gone all in, not just on this model, but on Sean McVay as a head coach, right? I think their real belief there, and there's such a connectedness between, and you need that because it's crazy. It's all four of the same guys who went for that initial contract with Jared that are now pitching to the owner. Okay, let's fix our mistake, essentially, right? So it's all the same guys, and they've all gone in on Sean McVay as their model for success, right? So it's really on him. I think this will tell you a lot about Sean over the next couple of years of whether he can build a sustainable model in this way. And I think it's going to be fascinating. I don't think that they're going to be regressing to that point. Sure. I think that now you can, I mean, even with this year on a precedented season, and the, you know, one of the more inconsistent offenses in the league, 18th in scoring, terrible in the red zone, terrible with turnovers, and they still, you know, have 10 wins. I think that they're going to be pretty good for a little while. Sorry, Lions fans.
That's fair enough. You know what? I'll take 2 25 overall picks or whatever it'll be. So, and you mentioned Sean McVay there. We're going to get a lot into Sean McVay, a lot into Jared Goff when we come back from the break with our special First Bite episode with Jordan Rodriguez. Stick with us on First Bite.
Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we are back on First Bite with special guest Jordan Rodriguez from The Athletic Los Angeles, talking about the Matthew Stafford, Jared Goff trade. We're just going to call it the Jared Goff trade from now on. Just kind of take the narrative away from the narrative thing. But let's just talk about Jared Goff right now. And before we get into his play, before we get into maybe how he'll fit in Detroit, let's talk about Jared Goff the person, because we have spent the past dozen years getting to know Matthew Stafford as well as we could, because he's kind of a private person. Jordan, who are the Lions getting as a person in Jared Goff? Because I've heard some stories, some good ones, but you've obviously worked with him kind of hand in hand. So what are we getting?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's fairly private as well. Like, when you see him on social media, it's going to be really team focused and sort of organizational focused and initiative focused. So in that regard, you won't learn a lot about him. But one thing that he really started enjoying and really, I think, grew up in a lot of ways in doing this past off season, spring and summer, was working with kids in the Englewood Unified School District area. Obviously, a school district that has faced so many challenges because of COVID, and then also, you know, some of the systemic things that that go on with school systems in general all across the country. And so his venture here was to make sure that a lot of every kid in this school district was getting an opportunity to learn, getting an opportunity to have the resources and tools that maybe would not have been afforded to them, making sure that they could have the resources and tools, especially for online and distance learning. And he would read to them every Tuesday, and he would read children's books to them. And that was not a side of Jared that I had actually ever seen. But they, you know, we would get these clips from the school district, and there would be Jared, and he'd be reading a different book to these kids on Zoom every Tuesday. And to me, that was really cool, because that was where I saw him grow as a person, was in doing those types of things, and particularly helping young people and helping kids. And he became someone who, especially in the spring and in the summer, became very vocal and supportive of his teammates' efforts to combat systemic oppression, systemic racism, police brutality, and was really on that leadership council in support and lending his platform and his voice to his teammates who were, you know, raising money and organizing for various causes, getting people registered to vote. He was a part of that as well. And so he really sort of threw himself into those types of things. Now, he had done charitable initiatives in the past, but this was really his big push. And he started directing proceeds from his merchandise, all toward the Englewood Unified School District. He like delivered Christmas trees to families. He really threw himself into it. And I think it was neat to see, because obviously since about, you know, 2019 and then escalating in November, things were tough in that building at times. And so I think it was one of the projects that he wanted to throw himself into, because it made him feel a sense of purpose, and it very much was something he could throw himself into outside of football that really mattered to him, and maybe took a little bit of that maybe stress off of him in other ways.
Love to hear that. That's great stuff.
That's awesome. That's really great to hear, especially when there's going to be opportunities to do that same work here in Detroit. And I think that's really going to speak volumes to a fan base that I think appreciates those kind of things. So with that being said, Jared Goff, the quarterback, what can he do well, Jordan? What is he going to do well this season right out of the box?
Yeah, I mean, he's still got an arm. I mean, you look at his charts, they don't show what capabilities his arm has, right? Like you look at his charts, because he was turning the ball, I'm starting with a negative, but I promise it'll turn into a positive. because he was turning the ball over so much, they moved, and because, you know, certain things with pass protection, there was some instability in the run game. They moved toward what I call a higher probability attack, aerial attack. And I know you guys, I'm preaching the choir here, but it's basically increasing your short range targets and your mid range targets, and decreasing your long developing passing plays and long developing air yards, because you are not throwing it downfield when out of structure, or not able to, considering pressure and whatnot. And you're already taking a low probability, like a 50-50 opportunity. And, you know, you've been turning it over. So now it becomes even less of an opportunity for you, right? So now you're basically increasing the probability of the play by moving it closer to the line of scrimmage through the air. So that does two things. It should make the offense run faster. It should increase your efficiency as a quarterback. It definitely increased his completion percentage. It should decrease turnovers. He had some issues with that this year, but what this is all going to say is, like, his chart is not indicative of the arm talent that he is capable of. Like, he is capable of getting the ball downfield. He is capable of explosive passing plays. I mean, you know, you watch him throw it, you know, 60 yards in the air in practice, right? Like, he's capable of doing those things. I think that a lot of things compounded for him in negative ways, that, and particularly the turnovers, that a fresh start will be very, very good for him in that regard. Feeling like you can leave those ghosts behind essentially and start over. You know, I joke about the bankroll contract. It's like a fresh bankroll for the Lions to work with. Well, Jared's also getting a fresh bankroll in a way, right? Like, he can start over, and they can build a system in which he thrives. Particularly, I think Anthony Lynn is going to be fantastic for him. Yeah. Because Jared Goff thrives when an offensive attack is predicated on a heavy, consistent rushing attack, because he can get into some of that boot action. He can get in the play action. He can do the types of things that settle him in as a quarterback. And I think that when those things click, he is a very, very efficient quarterback.
Well, yeah, now that we're bringing coaches into it, let's talk a little bit about, with, you know, everything that happened between Goff and McVay. And, you know, I think, I don't want to over-exaggerate. It just seems like they were kind of done with each other at the end. It doesn't, you know, based on what Jared Goff has said and even Sean McVay said, there was never anything personal about it. But there seems to be two trains of thought here about what happened with Goff in Los Angeles. One was that Sean McVay did everything he could, and if Sean McVay can't make Jared Goff a good quarterback, nobody can. And then there's this other train of thought that says Sean McVay has his system. He was very stubborn. He didn't let Jared Goff develop. He basically just said, hey, this is what I'm doing. You do it. I'm going to call the plays up until they turn my radio off before the play clock runs down. And therefore, Jared Goff never got to kind of do things on his own, call his own plays, you know, develop as a young quarterback. Now, obviously, it's not an either or situation here, but where do you think the kind of scenario lied with Jared Goff's time in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I just think it's such a gray period, right? Like, it's so nuanced, because there are elements of truth in a lot of different things that, like, you kind of see from either party. And yeah, for me, understanding what was going on and gathering from, you know, inside the building since, you know, November or so, when things started to kind of be more, there was more public dissatisfaction expressed at that point. If I look at it from a sort of philosophical standpoint, it's two human beings who evolved at different rates within a high pressure, high profile situation. That's just biology. Like, you know, Sean McVay operates at 6 million miles an hour in every single thing that he does. And the same goes for when he felt this worry and saw that certain defenses were starting to sort of not solve, but be better prepared for the types of things that his offense could do, as what happens in the league. Sure. And at 6 million miles per hour, feels he has to adjust and push and push and push and push. Well, when they initially signed Jared Goff, it was, this is a guy who can run our system. This is our system. Right. And part of the deal is that they never ask Jared to play outside of himself. Right. They never ask him to do more than handle the game, take care of the football. That's the huge one, taking care of the football, and, you know, get a couple explosives in when you get the look that you want, but run the system, right. Run the scheme. And it started becoming more of one person is here in that point of time, right? And that's Jared, and he's there in that point of time with what his expectation of what his role would be. And the other person in Sean McVay is moving forward at 6 million miles an hour, needing to get better, needing to evolve, needing to push. And they did not evolve at the same rate. And I don't think that there's a ton of blame that should be passed around, because that's a situation that you see happen in football. And the sense near the end, the one thing that really did get under Sean's skin and really needled at him was the turnovers, because it wasn't the fact that they happened. It was the way that they happened. It was like the decision-making process of that. And so it's like, you get to that point where you're really frustrated about that one specific element, and it sort of leaks into every other part of why you feel like you're moving and the other person is standing still. Now, it's not like a knock on anybody. It's what he was asked to do when they gave him the big contract, right? And yep. And so when one person changes direction and the other person is still going straight, like what do you do at that point if they're not changing direction with you? And so Sean, I know the frustration was about the turnover specifically, but I don't think it was ever about like his character or anything like that. Or, you know, there was just this feeling that we're going to have to move in this direction. And I don't feel that you can come along with me for that because you've kept going straight while I've tried to move. And it doesn't mean that going in the straight direction is incorrect. It's incorrect for me. Right. If that makes sense. And yeah. So I just think it was like basic biology. I mean, it was really like, and not to be glib, like, but it was like basically watching, you know, one of those movies where two people, are probably going to get divorced and you know, it's coming, and you could see all of the little clues and all of that. But yeah. And I think it doesn't mean that one thing will be more successful than the other. It just means that two people took two different directions and one person has roster say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the 2020 Rams, the breakup featuring Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston.
It's like, I was thinking more Blue Valentine, but
okay.
It's yeah. Really, I guess, depressing. It's a really depressing movie.
Yeah. I guess your taste may vary. So the last question that I have for you, Jordan, is, you know, we talked about, you know, off the field, the kind of person that Jared Goff is. What kind of leader is he in the locker room? Because I think this is something that a lot of people, TJ Lang included, has kind of talked about Matthew Stafford and him in that capacity, because he was more of a leader by example. And that was who he was as a quarterback on the field in terms of leadership. What kind of guy is Jared Goff when he's in the locker room, when he's on the field with the guys?
Yeah, he's very even, right? And some people respond really well to that. And other people think, you know, fire it up a little bit, man, right? But it depends on the situation, right? Because if you're losing, you would really like your guy to stay even. You don't want to see emotional outbursts. Like, you don't want to see dumb penalties. You don't want to see. But in other situations, it might be helpful to have, you know, to be a little bit more fired up. But I think what people will really like and appreciate about Jared in that locker room is he is resilient, he is durable, and he has taken a beating before, and he's just kept going, and really no expression changes on his face. And like, he just kind of, he's just very, very even keel all the time. Now, again, you can imagine Sean McVay is like Sonic the Hedgehog, including the hair, like hair included, like running around all over the place, running up and down the side. So like, you can kind of see where the juxtaposition happens, right?
Right.
So yeah. In other ways, you'll want other people on your roster. I think, again, Anthony Lynn, I cannot emphasize how great an addition Anthony Lynn is to that staff, because and Aubrey Pleasant, because Anthony Lynn is a guy who is going to provide that extra oomph to the players, right? Because sometimes the quarter, like, Jared's just going to be very even keel. And again, that's where you want when there's a storm. And I know Detroit has suffered and experienced some really depressing seasons. And this is like, he's just going to be just a fixed point on the horizon. And I think that's someone who players can appreciate. And I think that's somebody who coaches can appreciate, because he does not get rattled. He just doesn't. Like, he just, you could try as much as, like, you could really try. This guy's going against Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey in training camp. And he just doesn't rattle. I would rattle in that situation, sure. but he just stays really, really even keel. And again, depending on the system and the situation you're in, that could be a negative, and it kind of maybe became one. But if you flip it around and you're building something, you need someone who's even keel. You need someone who's going to stay the course and do what he does. And also, he's not someone who's ever going to try to talk over people, talk over other leaders. Like, he's someone who's like, hey, we're all in this together, guys. Like, I want to hear your voices and value who you are as much as, you know, I'm the quarterback, but your voice matters too. And he's very even in that way.
Kind of like a complimentary leader.
Yeah. He's like, you could offer something that I maybe can't. So you should speak and all of that.
Madden awareness rating 99.
I mean, that kind of sounds like
he says he didn't see this coming, so I don't know about that. Yeah, well, I don't know about that one, but
we'll knock it down in the next update, but we need something to look forward to.
But yeah, it's interesting that you do say that, because I mean that's the exact, you know, goal of the Lions front office and coaching staff, is that collaboration, no egos in the room kind of thing. And to have that in sort of leadership in the locker room would be kind of an interesting way to, not the Matthew, I think that also kind of describes to a T Matthew Stafford, if we're being completely honest.
Yeah,
I think he's kind of like the, not the guy that's necessarily going to be screaming in the huddle, although we've seen some of that sometimes, but I think maybe in terms of personality we won't really see that much of a change between Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff, so just kind of an interesting thing to keep an eye on. But I think we got to wrap this up. Jordan, before we let you go, let me give you the floor for a minute to talk about where people can find you. I know you did a quick Q&A with our friend Chris Burke. So let us know what other sort of content there's out there that Lions fans might be interested in.
Yeah, I think Lions fans would really be interested in a really deep dive about sort of the escalation of this situation behind closed doors and how it culminated in this trade on Saturday night, which already feels like years ago. It is pinned at the top of my Twitter profile at Jordan Rodrigue, JourdanRodrigue. And so you guys can find it there. And you can find me at The Athletic Los Angeles, at the Athletic NFL. I host a podcast called 11 Personnel. Shocking name, I know. And I love what I do. I love collaborating with Chris Burke and Nick Baumgartner over at The Athletic Detroit. Great guys. Follow them as well. I'm sure you already do. But I really appreciate you guys giving me the time, and fascinating conversation, fascinating situation as it plays out.
Yeah. Interesting times. Jordan, great stuff. Really appreciate your time here. Really appreciate you all for listening, and we will be back at it soon. So stick around. It's chaos, everybody. Be kind.